Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast series by Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm Giuseppe Porcaro, and today we will speak about the geopolitics of artificial intelligence. Joining me from the west coast of the United States is Sarah Schocker, who is head of geopolitics at OpenAI. Hi, Sarah. It is a pleasure to have you here. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, and thank you for having me.
Going to the topic of our episode, generative artificial intelligence is perceived and even feared by some as a threat to humanity. Whether this is actually true, numerous risks to fundamental rights, safety, and human autonomy due to the lightning-fast development of AI are already having an impact on all sectors of the economy and society. And there are many areas, speaking of geopolitics, that artificial intelligence is changing the international balance of power, from the AI role in the competition between the United States and China to the role of AI into authoritarian control, AI's contribution to rise in power of the private sector, the general artificial intelligence big debate, and not least the change into the military and defense industry that AI is bringing in. Obviously, in this episode, we cannot speak about all of those at once, but I would like to pick up this last example about the military as a first case study about understanding a little bit better how this is changing. The AI in defense, we've been seeing applications of ChatGPT-like platforms like Palantir for military decision-making, facial recognition systems to identify the enemies, the drones, this is like up in the news every day with the war in Ukraine, and so forth. And the investments in military AI as a share of the rising global defense expenditure are around $6 billion in 2021, comparing to a big global defense expenditure of $2 trillion in 2020. This really reflects the fact that the defense industry is having a burgeoning love affair with technology. And Sarah, given your expertise, perhaps we can start from that specific case of the military use of AI, and given how it is interconnected also with the other issues I've been speaking about, tell us a little bit how AI applications are changing the way the defense industry is developing.
Yeah, so I think, as you noted, AI investments are a fraction of total US and global defense spending. I would probably say that the enthusiasm around AI currently surpasses actual defense applications. That being said, I think there has been a growing interest in deploying AI applications in the battlefield directly. And that is apart and separate from research and development, because I do think that most AI applications at the moment, especially from the US side, are not necessarily being deployed in real world settings, but are currently essentially research projects. Ukraine's an interesting example. My view about new technologies is such that I believe most often what ends up happening is that the periphery, low middle income countries, counterinsurgencies, tend to be the spaces where many of these technologies are tested first. And so I think that Ukraine ends up being a microcosm where we should be paying attention to what is actually happening. So as I think you've noted, a number of AI applications that are really great examples here. Facial recognition for identifying, for example, dead Russian soldiers. We know that has been in deployment. Summaries for the purpose of data analytics and intelligence is another case in point where, in fact, defense actors like the United States have been pretty vocal about using summary tools for helping intelligence and decision-making decisions. And so I know that the impulse is to think of doomsday scenarios first, right? I think most often we have the view of the killer robot that has been, and that view, I think, has been assisted, probably justifiably so, as a result of the post 9/11 pivot to drone technology and ISR, or intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance technologies. But often AI applications are inserted into defense applications in ways that are really hard to validate by outside observers. They're not necessarily associated with what we might call the shooter or trigger function, but really as a way to improve the data analysis process, especially in scenarios where human beings have been identified as the bottleneck. And that has really been the driving motivation behind investing more in AI technologies, just the ability to gather more data, process it more faster, ascend the fog of war, as it were. Of course, there are still very serious ethical issues associated with that line of thinking, even if it's not directly associated with the shooter or trigger function. For example, data collection of often vulnerable civilian populations in war, that is currently an ungovernable space where it's not really clear what the ethical norms should be around data collection of that kind. So just because we're not talking directly about killer robots, does not necessarily mean we can abdicate the ethical decision-making around deploying these products and deploying these products or technologies in violent conflict.
Indeed. And for example, NATO has been equipping themselves already with some sort of charter of values that the application of AI should comply with. And of course, we have international treaties and so on, by which they should be respected in terms of military applications in general, saying AI should not fall outside the treaties that already regulates these kind of things. But one thing of concerns, and where there is a little bit of overlap with the more broader discussion about the economics and the geopolitics of AI development, is the fact that a lot of these applications of AI in the military might not be exclusively military application, in the sense that there are a lot of non-adversarial AI systems which might not be developed exclusively or used for defense, and they are kind of dual use by nature. For our listeners, dual use means that they can be used for various civilians and military purpose. For example, a pattern recognition algorithm can be developed to detect cancer cells or to identify and select targets in a military operation. And Sarah, my question to you on this, because the whole issue of dual use is really at the core of the geopolitical confrontation that we are having at the moment, and also blends in with the economics, of course, because industries that are developing technologies that can be used for civilians and they are strategic, they are also having this other side. For instance, when it comes to semiconductors and so forth, this has been really one of the things at the forefront, for example, of understanding what kind of national security concerns there might be on strategic industries. And I refer very much about China and the United States, but also here in Europe, we are concerned about dual use and these strategic sectors. So how do you see this side of the story, which is maybe less focused on the defense industry as such, but more like in this gray zone that is being unveiled by the development of AI?
I mean, I think you really hit the nail on the head. So it is true that many technologies that are in development today by private sector and also open source developers, I should add, often are built with the intention of beneficial civilian purposes, but can be indeed reappropriated for military purposes. I've seen AI being described both as potentially dual use, but also as a general purpose technology. So there are consequences to the fact that these technologies are initially built for civilian purposes, but can be reappropriated in a multitude of ways. I'm going to touch very briefly on the international regulatory aspect, so not quite economics, but then I will move towards trying to insert an economic angle into this. So the first up is the question of international treaties and regulation. Generally speaking, when we're talking about military behavior and the types of restrictions on technologies that can facilitate harm in violent conflict, usually we're trying to target armaments. And it's not really clear that AI, especially if you're using that AI application for machine vision, for summarizing data, that any of these applications would fall under current international regulatory regimes. The United Nations CCW forum that is focused on lethal autonomous weapons systems, I think, is a case in point here. It's not clear that applications like ChatGPT or most AI models, I would say, would fall under the discussions that are happening at the Convention on Certain Conventional Weapons, or the CCW. So that becomes challenging from a regulatory perspective. But more practically, in the battlefield, in a military operation, this also creates some problems because it becomes difficult to understand the intentions of your adversaries as a result of increased human-machine interaction. Sometimes we can refer to this as offense-defense distinguishability. And we have several real-life scenarios where this has been the case, but perhaps most recently, as it involves AI, is the Kargu 2, which crashed in Libya. It's a Turkish drone, and a United Nations report framed or described the Kargu 2 as the first deployment of a lethal autonomous weapon system in battle. And that characterization, of course, spurred a lot of controversy and a lot of debate. But what I think is really interesting about that description is that it highlights how difficult it is to verify as an outside observer whether AI has been used in a drone or other military technology, or whether a human being was responsible for target selection, for instance. And so that becomes extremely difficult, again, to know what the intention of the adversary is or who is responsible when something goes wrong. And from a larger scale, I mean, I know that I've so far focused on insurgencies, counterinsurgencies, and then smaller countries like Ukraine being invaded by Russia. But on a larger scale, because there's increased concern about near-peer competition and near-peer war, is whether this might result in inadvertent escalation. Generally speaking, militaries do not want to escalate without being intentional about it. But if you can't really validate whether or not it is an AI or a human being that is responsible for a particular military action, it can be difficult to know whether you yourself should escalate militarily or not. And we have a number of historical cases that we can point to and say, wow, that was a very near miss. I mean, certainly the realm of near nuclear accidents is a case in point there as well.
And sorry if I interrupt you. Do you think that the best way for going around this challenge is through regulation, or together with regulation, you are also thinking about other tools? Something that is built in technology as well, or what else is needed? And also, like, geopolitically speaking, in terms of international cooperation, what else do you think it would be needed to prevent such unintentional escalations, as you put it?
So generally, the way of alleviating or reducing the risk of inadvertent escalation has come through confidence building measures. And we did recently release a paper, a workshop proceedings actually, called Confidence Building Measures for AI, that comes with a list of potential solutions that can help alleviate or mitigate that risk. I will note that I don't think it is actually possible to eliminate that risk entirely, but there are ways to dampen that risk and the challenge itself. So in that paper, we highlight solutions, for example, like hotlines that have historically been used for, you know, in other domains, most famously nuclear, but not exclusively so. But if one were to integrate or allow or normalize using a hotline between countries for what one might think or interpret as an AI-caused accident, then that can help alleviate some of these concerns. You can also do tabletop and war games or crisis scenario exercises. And that generally reduces hostilities. It also allows other potential competitors and allies to understand emergency mitigation strategies emergency strategies. There are also solutions that already exist in the commercial sector, such as transparency reports, model cards, system cards, which detail the limitations and potential problems associated with certain AI models. And that can allow outside observers more access or understanding as to what, you know, why a particular action doesn't seem to follow what they expect of an AI system, or between a human machine interaction. And if that system card also includes a section, for example, on limitations associated with human machine interaction, which I think is very important in the military sector, then that can go an even longer way. And that human machine interaction piece and the limitations associated with human-machine interaction is not something that we typically see in model cards that come out of the commercial sector. But I would encourage and go as far as to say I would recommend that if military actors do plan on using AI models in their operations, that they do include that section in a model card or a transparency report of some kind. So that particular paper has a list of potential solutions. And if people want to read it, it is freely available on archive. And it's called Confidence Building Measures for AI.
Well, this is very interesting. On the other hand, it also somehow suggests that within the international relations system, we need to start to put AI as a very important variable. I mean, you mentioned hotlines that existed back in the days. Sometimes those kind of measures requires a first step, which is an agreement on the rules of the game, which means international cooperation and among all the actors. But what we have been seeing in the past year or so, it has been rather an escalation in the confrontation among geopolitical actors. And given what you just described before about the dual use of the technology due to as well the particular context we're living in, we can read, for example, I mentioned it before, but I would like to maybe spend a little bit of time, if possible, on the rivalry between the United States and China, because we've been seeing a lot of measures on both sides, which is trying to limit, first of all, technological access, and then this is justified by national security concerns. And AI now, given what we are discussing here, plays a role in all this. And I would like to hear your point of view about this and how this could, these support plans or restrictions could affect the technological progress in the US, in China, and beyond.
Right. So I think as a result of concerns surrounding AI and military AI, though for other reasons as well that are not quite linked to AI, the United States has opted to engage in what is sometimes referred to as supply side controls, or technology denial, as it's sometimes referred to as well. So essentially export controls that deny the hardware that is required to build AI systems, AI models. AI models increasingly require a tremendous amount of compute. And we know this as a result of scaling laws. And so that has been the approach. I wouldn't call that necessarily a confidence building measure. That's a serious attempt to constrain technological ability. Confidence building measures focus primarily also on state behavior. So one of the weaknesses of export controls is that they don't really set norms around state behavior with the technologies that are already at the disposal of states. So it's all fine and well to try and restrain someone's technological capabilities in some way. However, with algorithmic improvements and, you know, lowered costs, and not to mention that, of course, China has responded to many of these export controls with increased massive funding into their own nascent semiconductor industry, to be determined whether they're able to eventually match and keep up with chip designs offered by TSMC. But again, it doesn't necessarily target state behavior, and it certainly doesn't help alleviate some of the pressures that currently exist within the international system. I would describe our current moment as one that is tense and potentially hostile. So confidence building measures are a mechanism to try and reduce some of that hostility and also find shared rules of the road around military and state behavior. I don't personally believe that these export controls are a permanent solution. You know, it's my view that I'm going to assume that policymakers are smart and realize that these are not permanent solutions either. This is a temporary stopgap measure. So the question becomes then, well, how do you get other states to the table? How do you negotiate and discuss how these AI tools are going to be used? And how can we prevent issues like unintended accidents or inadvertent escalation? So that's really what confidence building measures are meant to target. And they are an additional tool in the toolbox, but they shouldn't be understood as being in the same toolbox as export controls themselves, which are, of course, geared towards trying to target hardware to actually address the military capability question rather than the trust question.
Yeah, moving a little bit away from the military side and going more broadly into the impact that AI is having into how geopolitical decision making is made and in general, like how foreign policy is conducted, it seems to me that even things like ChatGPT per se, but applications, like broader applications of AI into processing big data and so forth, which are relevant for the decision making in the foreign policy field, already this could provoke some sort of revolution in the way actually analysts, advisors, and then ultimately the decision makers are going to take decisions over when you're speaking about unintended consequences and so on, like and the fog of war, but there is also like a fog in international relations, which is less gruesome than the one on the battlefield, but it's equally sometimes preventing, you know, sound decisions because you might not exactly know what exactly the other actors are up for. While now with the processing of this data, it's possible to, I wouldn't say predict the future because this is obviously impossible, but we can definitely have a bigger pool of data we can base our analysis on. One of the famous examples that are always brought to the table when we speak about these things is, for instance, the prediction or not prediction of Russia invading Ukraine and the fact that by analyzing and cross-cutting a lot of information, crawling the web, but also satellite data and so forth, a lot of analysts have been predicting the fact that an attack was extremely plausible, while a lot of analysts were still struggling to understand what was going on and what might have gone on and so on until the night before. So how do you think actually AI can change the way we are doing foreign policy? I know it's a really, really big question, but try to bring your own point of view on this.
So I think for me, when I hear a question like that, I position it within a history of a promise that more technology or more data or adding value to data is going to result in better outcomes or better predictability. In some cases, that promise has materialized. And I certainly don't want to come out against the idea of using more data. What you're referring to, I think, is anomaly detection or event detection. It depends on the model that's being used. Some models are better than others. I think mostly when I hear stories like this as well, beyond positioning it in the history of technological promise, is to think mostly about the actual workers themselves, the foreign policy analysts who would be relying on these tools. Before we start integrating, or as we start integrating these types of tools into regular workflows, I think there's truly a need for increased AI literacy. Human-machine interaction, as I've referred to this concept several times in the course of our interview, matters quite a lot here. Do analysts become overconfident or over-reliant on predictive outputs from an AI model? How does one interrogate the outputs of an AI model, especially if that model is black boxed? Will analysts feel like they can't debate or refute these suggestions? We know that this sometimes happens, that this is an actual real risk. And a lot of research and development from the military side is actually targeted at this problem itself. How exactly do you ensure that individuals are confident in the results that the results are being offered by the AI system, because both over and under trust come with issues. So I would probably greet this particular solution, the increase of data or AI data analysis tools with caution. Now, that being said, I personally use AI tools in my day-to-day workflow. I find that they are good idea partners. I use ChatGPT for brainstorming. Sometimes I like to write a paragraph here and there, and I ask the model to critique and to say, what am I missing here? And in that sense, I think I've become a better critical thinker. So I do think that there is a role for integrating these tools into one's day-to-day workflow. But we've also seen situations, often with a lot of news and hype, where individuals aren't very familiar with the limitations of these tools, and they make sometimes really tragic decisions. And this, I think, right now has often materializes in the form of hallucinations and also erroneous citations, where people don't realize that many of these tools do not correctly cite their sources. But because they sound so persuasive, it's really easy to get fooled. And so, again, a word of caution, I think they're very powerful tools, very useful, but they are not replacements themselves for human judgment. So how do we integrate these tools without completely ceding human common sense?
Absolutely. And this is actually true for foreign policy, for the military battlefield, to any other application and interaction between the humans and the AI. So I could say that those last words are actually much broader than that. And I think that they can help also our listeners to reflect a little bit broader about all the stuff. Unfortunately, this is all the time we have for today. And I would like to thank you so much. We could discuss for much longer about these topics, as I said at the beginning. But we will come back for sure on AI-related issues at The Sound of Economics. I would like to remind our listeners that, as usual, you can read in open access all the analysis by our scholars on our website, www.bruegel.org. Sarah, thanks a lot for joining this conversation, and thanks to everyone who has been tuning in with The Sound of Economics for this episode. Until next time, bye-bye.